What would the world look like if we all pushed ourselves to have candid conversations with people who didn't look like us, think like us, or live like us? I'm Dave Hollis, and I'm on a mission to learn more about this world by meeting more of the people who live here. You may not always agree with everything you hear, but I guarantee you'll come away more informed on topics you might never have thought to seek out before. This isn't just a podcast, it's a community. And when we raise each other up, we all rise together. All right, so I know I already gave a little introduction about the two of you, but I would like to take a moment to let you introduce yourselves to anyone who might not be familiar with your story. Jay and Catherine, will you tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got here?
Yes, I'm Catherine.
I'm Jay.
And in a nutshell, as a 26-year-old new mom with a 6-month-old baby in the next room, I suffered a massive brainstem stroke out of absolutely nowhere, no medical history, no warning, no symptoms, nothing. And would subsequently spend 2 years in hospitals and rehab to relearning to walk and eat and speak again. And from there, almost 5 years of baseline recovery before kind of being able to get our head above water and recognize this was the new deal for our lives, the new path that we were going to be on. I am disabled today very severely. I can't walk on my own. I use a wheelchair and sometimes a cane. And I have a lot of health problems, big health challenges, but life is extremely good. I've stayed married to this guy. We've gone on to have a second child who's 5 now. And we have an incredible nonprofit for families with disabilities like us and put on a camp for families in the summertime. And we've written 2 books. What else?
Yeah, I think you've covered all of them.
Okay.
That's 1 point. That's us.
Okay.
I love it.
So far.
The thing I didn't mention in the introduction is that in real time, in 2008, as this is happening, our families are going to the same church. So,
yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So we are, like, part of why I reached out was because I was witness in real time to Jay and Catherine pre this thing happening at 26 and post this thing happening at 26, and have stayed connected to your story in part because I was in the audience of the miracle that was happening inside of your lives, and have just been following your story because it is truly a testament to the power of hope. It's an interesting thing. You've written these 2 books, Hope Heals and Suffer Strong. I want to encourage every human being who's got ears or eyes to read or listen to each of these. But we have, as a part of the business that we run and the tools that we put in people's hands, talked about the idea that hope is not a strategy, which is an interesting thing, right? Like the idea of hoping that your life's going to get better or hoping that things are going to work out okay just isn't enough, that you have to actually put a plan together, that you got to do the work. At the same time, as I find myself in an interesting season of pushing through struggle on a level that I didn't previously expect to be confronted with, I have come to appreciate that hope is definitely also a strategy in persevering through things that you did not expect to come your way. So let's start just by talking about this idea of hope, because, man, you've had to lean so much into it for having to push past something that obviously you did not see coming, had no interest in having enter your life, and yet you have turned into the life's work, the thing that will inevitably end up being the legacy of what you leave on this planet, in large part because of your ability to connect to hope through really, really hard things.
I think as from a starting point, some of the things that have been really helpful as we think about hope have been that hope is not the opposite of hurt. You know, sometimes we think, okay, my life is hard, so it's so far away from hope. or my life is hopeful, so there should be no hardship in it. And I think really what we have found that hope is sort of in the middle of this continuum where hurt is on one end of it and hype is on the other end. And hope is sort of this mix, this commingling of the good and the hard life, this struggle. And I think sometimes just if we can change that perspective, then we can lean into this hope that's a little messier than we've sort of come to think of it, even as we use it sort of modernly. You know, hope is a lot more gritty and earthy and down in the mess of life. And yet it nonetheless sees this transcendent future. And in our experience, this future promise lived out in the present is what hope is. And it might not make sense sort of given the circumstances, given the things that are happening. But I think that's how we know it's true hope, is when it transcends the circumstantial. And certainly that makes it a little more of this this stable through line. Because if hope is just sort of contingent on your feeling of positivity, or, you know, your ability to pull yourself up by the bootstraps, you're just on this roller coaster of whatever comes along. Yeah, you're without hope. Okay, now I'm with hope because things are okay. Now I'm without hope again because they turned out a little differently.
Right.
And so I think it's taken us, you know, it didn't just happen, you know, the next day after our life was upended out of the blue.
Right.
It was this sort of day by day filling up this experiencing hope through other people's stories, this leaning into some things we already knew, even in our faith experience, but really putting them to the real test and seeing if they would withhold and finding that they did. And then that is what builds on the next time that something happens. You know, even most recently, 2 months ago, we were back in the, you know, MRI with some major brain issues that Catherine is experiencing, literally like getting some news today that's mixed.
Yeah, this morning,
so,
yeah.
That is to say, you know, we want our stories of hope to be this upward trajectory and this one note and sort of, I get it and now I'm good. Like, let's just keep going upward.
And they're more complex than that.
And it just doesn't work that way on Earth. And that's okay. And I think sort of mourning the loss of that lack of control, but also leaning into that and sort of releasing some of the burden of what we carry is this paradox that's really, it's freeing and it's hard. And yet it's been the way forward for us. You know, yeah. We're both type A, we're both pretty controlling. We're both pretty,
oh yeah,
you know, on top of it and want to know the plans. And,
oh yeah.
And so this, this past 12 years has really upended that. And yet it's helped us lean into this new way forward. That's just opened up. Yeah. Different way of thinking.
And Dave, I want to say there is such a beautiful humility and vulnerability in saying, so we've said hope is not a strategy, but in this season, I'm recognizing there is a strategic element to hope. That's very beautiful and real to say that out loud, because of course it's not the strategy only. There's a lot that goes into it, but hope absolutely is part of the survival strategy of this world. I mean, for sure, I've seen firsthand that without a sense that something is happening outside of me, how can I possibly move forward? Like, I don't have enough in me to get out of bed tomorrow morning if I don't see something beyond my current situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, my experience in these last few months, it's definitely not been linear. I'm sure that the experience in your last 12 years, also not linear. You have a string of good days and then some bad ones. You have a string of some good months and then some bad ones. It's just not a total linear process. But also, I've found myself in a world where I had a vision for what my future was going to look like, now staring at this blank piece of paper as I am now going to write out what the rest of my life will look like as it departs from what I thought it might. And that is both exciting and terrifying. It's exhilarating and daunting. I have to face a bunch of the fears of things that are different from what I thought my being, my life, my family might look like. I'm sure you had that same kind of experience because, hey, you had a vision for what your future might look like, and then you were handed a blank piece of paper. How long has it taken, or is it a thing that just continues to be written for you to pivot into, oh, this is our opportunity to actually write a completely different story because the cards we've been dealt are different from the ones we thought we'd have?
It's an everyday process, but I would say it took about 5 years after the stroke to really come up for air and embrace the new normal element. And I love what you said, pivot, because that has been our great strength, that there was one. We take no credit, mm-hmm. but pivoting is what life is for everyone. You know, I'm the one in the wheelchair, but everybody's got invisible wheelchairs happening in their stories. And mm-hmm. it's all, how do we pivot and embrace the wheelchair? I mean, that's the name of the game.
Mm-hmm. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah, so 5 years in, you come up for air. It feels like, all right, maybe there's this opportunity because of a friend. I think in the book, you said that a friend came to you and was encouraging you to bring your story to other people. Was it a daunting thing to think about having to share, to talk, to carry the weight of some of your experience, or was it exciting? How did you feel about, after you were up for air, actually bringing this experience to the world?
Cathartic. Yeah, I think it was cathartic, but I think it also was a process that evolved and built on smaller versions of that. So I think sometimes we just want to jump into this big thing we've never done or experienced, and there's some benefits to that, but also sort of this build that's a very natural, you know, going from sharing our story on a blog, you know, like a prayer update blog for many years. You know, it wasn't like we're like, okay, like even a year in, we should write a book.
Right.
We know the ending of this story. Like, thank God we didn't write it then, because it wouldn't have been over. And it would have probably been a really even sadder book than we wrote, because the arc was not even nearly finished. And it's still not. But I mean, I think that's one piece of advice in a figurative way, but also a really practical way. Like, don't write your story until it's over, until you can see the clear arc of where you want it to be and where it goes. And so I think for us, like, it was daunting in some ways, but we had a lot of, I think, mentors too, who had told their stories, who had really impressed something personal on us, like Johnny Erickson. Tata is a woman who's, she's just, well, one of our dearest mentors. She's in Southern California too, but has this incredible ministry, probably the biggest international faith-based special needs ministry called Johnny and Friends.
Disability ministry.
So she broke her neck when she was 17, and her book was kind of like, you know, all over the world in like the late 70s. She would be on the Billy Graham crusades. And so we, you know, we had just like tracked with this incredible woman who is still quadriplegic to this day, celebrating 53 years. I'm not celebrating, just, you know, remembering 53 years in a wheelchair. And so I think you look to people's stories like that who have meant something to you. And it bolsters you to say, I don't even know if I can do this. I don't know how to keep showing up in the real vulnerability and the pain of this, because it's still a really wounding thing to remember. And even to do that publicly, there's a lot of nuance to that. But I think we saw her, I mean, 30 years after, 40, it would have been like 45 years after her accident, tell her story in a public place and weep still.
Yeah.
And we're like, that is what we want in terms of how we want to be vulnerable enough to go there. Right. To the real grief that is still there, the woundedness, but the hope that's still there. Because the worst thing is sort of like this canned story that just feels like, okay, now I'm going to give the keynote and here's this worst thing that happened and the best things that happened. And yeah, it's not really registering like a human experience. So that was, there was elements like that, personal mentors in our life and stories that had impacted us that informed how we, I think, felt we could also do that. And so,
and I think what we also felt and still feel is that, I mean, would you say I got the miracle or didn't get the miracle? It's always up for debate, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm living as a fully disabled person. I can't drive a car. Mm-hmm. My hand doesn't work. My face is paralyzed. So am I healed? It's up for debate. Mm-hmm. However, that's part of the beautiful magic of sharing our story is we're wounded healers. We get to be a part of healing other people. And we like to say and tell other people that your story of overcoming whatever your nightmare is helping to blaze a trail that someone else will walk through, and it will illuminate their lives to be able to their way out.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. I mean, it's so good. Other people seeing themselves in your story or being inspired to believe that they also have the wherewithal to make it through whatever their hard thing is because of seeing how you've been able to do the same. It's such an inspiring thing. There's power in your ability to share that gives people permission to feel like they can overcome. And man, there's so much good in that. I love it so much. Talk about your relationship to faith before and after the stroke. I mean, I love what you just said, Catherine. I think it's, you know, it is the question of questions. Like, are you the miracle because of or in spite? Like, There is something in the legacy that you will leave on this planet that is a result of this thing that you had to go through. I can connect right now to, man, there are so many miracles and so many people being blessed by your story, but I'm sure that having to go through something like this, like anyone who goes through hard things, will inevitably challenge your faith. I also appreciate that faith is one of those things that until it gets challenged, maybe isn't necessarily something that you have a perfect handle on what it is until you find yourself having to wrestle with it in the midst of struggle. So just talk a little bit about your faith before and after the struggle.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, we're from the South originally. I can give that a bit of context. And I think so much of you know, who we are is built on sort of the communities that we come from. And so often we sort of look back and lament or think we would have done differently. But the reality is you know, the good and the bad and the hard and the complicated is what's brought us to who we are today, right? So we did come out of like sort of the Bible Belt culture. My dad's a pastor still, and we grew up in the church, but it wasn't until we moved away from that to Southern California when we had just got married, when I was going to go to law school at Pepperdine, Catherine was doing some stuff in the entertainment industry, that we really got to choose, like, is this something we want for ourselves? Nobody's going to know or care if we go to church. Nobody's going to judge that. Like, we don't get any points in this culture for doing that. But we found that, you know, our first Sunday in LA, we just felt drawn to seek that out at the community that you talked about, Bel Air Pres Church. And we found something there that we wanted to be part of our adult, you know, our new adult life and our marriage, which was this group of people going through the same thing and sort of struggling through in LA with being married and being young and trying to figure out their faith and how it all worked out.
Right.
And so that was really as formative as the Bible Belt was growing up, that sort of that season of early marriage and sort of taking ownership of our faith and exploring it and working it out with other people and their own unique struggles and questions was huge. And little did we know that was sort of teeing us up to enter into this huge storm and this huge sort of test. And
we believe that God is always preparing us for what he has prepared for us. So in a way, he was equipping us uniquely for a season where we really needed to feel the comfort of God. I mean, it was, and it is very striking in all of our stories, mm-hmm. how there is such a comfort of walking through life not alone.
And I think even right before we I mean, a couple of weeks before in our small group, we were reading Dietrich Bonhoeffer's book called Life Together. And Bonhoeffer, you know, was this theologian in the kind of Nazi era Germany, and just really wrote transformationally about what it means to live in this, again, not sort of secularized, politicized Christianity, but like this real, like trying to walk together in this really hard but good life of the kingdom of God on earth with other people. And like, what a gift that is. And so we were really getting to do that in a way, you know, and again, it was right before everything changed. And that community is what showed up for us. And I think that's the beautiful opportunity we overlook in our suffering, is that we don't have to do it alone. We were never meant to do it alone. And things like the church in their most brilliant manifestation come alive when the bottom is ripped out from under us. And that's what we get to give each other. And we often say, like, you know, the platitudes that we saw, you know, here, or even ourselves, like, want to kind of like throw out when people are in pain, you know, like, I'm going to say them because I don't want to perpetuate them anymore. But, you know, the dumb things people say because they want to fill the silence and they want to instill something positive. But what we found in those waiting rooms, you know, the hospital, when it was very unknown what the outcome would be, was that the people who gave us their presence and their tears were the deepest ministry to us. And those were, you know, those were our church people. Those were our community. They weren't going to try to make it better because it was awful, but they were going to say, you know, but you don't have to do this alone, and we're going to be with you, and we're grieving this with you, and we're going to even hope for you until you can hope for yourself again.
Yeah.
And I think that is the great gift of our community and our faith community, particularly, you know, to be really honest and fair, it wasn't the law school that showed up above and beyond. Well, you know, there were some. It wasn't the acting class folks who showed up. You know, they did a little bit, but it was really, you know, it's LA, so whatever. But it was our church who sat vigil in the waiting room for 3 straight weeks, 24/7. And when I think about that, it's a pretty deep reality that is what they had to offer. They couldn't change the outcomes medically. They couldn't say, oh yeah, and like, just give it 6 more weeks and, you know, you're going to be up and out of the, they just said, what we can give you is showing up and not looking away from your tragedy, but showing up until you can start showing up again, you know, to your life.
Yeah.
And it changed. So good. Changed everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Catherine, I was hoping you'd talk just a little about how Habakkuk 3:17-18 was reworded to fit your life experience just a little bit, when you started doing it, how it's continued to give you some hope.
Basically, for almost the full 2 years after the stroke, I was relearning how to do everything, and nothing on my body would work. So I'm in therapy to swallow again for months and months, 11 months total, and could not swallow food, and only learned to walk again kind of after 18 months of not walking, and just really dramatic, like having to relearn to be a human being in a lot of ways. And I found such a comfort in that passage that, do you want me to say it or?
Yes, yes, please. Okay.
So Habakkuk 3:17-18 say that the fig tree does not bud and there are no grapes on the vine, though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stall, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God, my Savior. And for some reason, I took that passage and I rewrote it to fit my situation, which I would highly recommend for you and all your listeners to do. Because when I did it, I was really preaching to my own heart, like, this is what we're doing. So this is what we get to do. So I wrote, though I cannot walk, and I'm confined to a wheelchair, though my face is paralyzed and I cannot smile, though I am extremely impaired and cannot take care of my own baby boy, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God, my Savior. And in doing that, I was telling myself, this is what we're going to do. are going to rejoice because the joy is deep inside of me somewhere, somehow still, and I am going to be a part of rejoicing. And it has continued to transform my mind, truly, to come to a place of recognizing that the joy was never taken from me. And this is a word for you, Dave, right now, and for many of your listeners, that joy is something that can never be taken, no matter how bad the story is. I believe if you have a pulse, you have a purpose, that it is not contingent on how great life works out for you. That's a lie. Life can be really horrible for you, and you can have a deep, transcendent peace from the Holy Spirit, joy of the Lord, comfort of Him in your heart, and it can change how you feel about your story, which is ultimately what matters, how we're feeling about this and acting based on how we feel.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're making me cry, so good work. I was not expecting that, but it's a super powerful exercise, and it's something that I also will encourage every single person to do, no matter what you're going through. The idea that, you know, you can still find joy and rejoice and all of those things, my goodness, that's a good word. Good word, Catherine. I know that you have two boys, James and John. They are, I believe, 12 and 5. Do they have a grasp on what has happened, what is happening? I assume that they have a handle on what is happening in their lives, but how have they kind of come into appreciating the world that you live inside of?
Yeah.
I think, you know, one of the great fears of being a parent is just what you will give to your kids. And it's sort of this double-edged sword because you want to give them the best of you and the best opportunities and even go beyond, you know, what you've experienced. And yet, you know, inherently that you're also getting them possibly some of the worst things of you, you know, possibly some of the hardest things that you can't control. And I think watching Catherine, so James was 6 months old when she had the stroke. And so, you know, she had just blossomed as a mother in that short time. You know, he'd go everywhere with her. They would even do little modeling jobs together. They were on like some Target products. And it was just like this beautiful sort of melding and watching her become a mother. And it was way before we even thought we'd be parents. And so watching that then conversely ripped away from her was just one of the worst tragedies of it all. And, you know, she would wake up hazily months after the stroke and be like, you know, she couldn't even talk, but she would try to breastfeed James, you know, she had just breastfed him. And then all of a sudden, you know, that stopped. But her mind was fuzzy. And so she was sort of think that he could just be with her in the hospital bed. And obviously he had been cared for by people and bottle fed for months after her stroke. And so that awakening took a long time.
I was going to say, we talk about how the deep maternal instinct we think is even stronger than what a stroke took away is my focus upon waking up and understanding from the coma like delirium is give me the baby. I got to take care of him. Not even really noticing yet. I can't even eat or speak or walk. I need that baby to take care of. But I was in no place to take care of him.
And I think then watching again, the progression of this new life be born, you know, the second chance life. And with that, the second chance motherhood and the second chance family. And then getting to a place years down the road where the doctors and everybody approved, like, if you want to grow your family, we'll give you our blessing to do it kind of against all odds. Like if this is what you want. And then we had our son, John. And again, like Catherine said, just that sort of the deeper thing than even a brainstem injury would be this maternal love. And it has been part of the healing process. And I think our boys have not really known any other life. You know, I think as they've looked around and gotten older, they kind of realize, oh, like, you know, our mom can't drive us to this, or, you know, there's different things, but they've also seemed like, but our story is something that is, there's something weighty and special, and we get to be about entering in with what we've been given in our life to go enter into the hard stories of other people. And so even our the camp that we started a couple of years ago was just, you know, the story of disability was not a story, even after Catherine became disabled, it wasn't a story we wanted to live. You know, it was like, for many years, it was like, we were praying she gets out of the wheelchair, praying everything goes back to normal, you know, that we can just sort of pretend this didn't happen. And then you get in a couple of years and you realize, like, that's just not how it works. There's this line of demarcation in your life. You can't go across it again to what used to be. And so we, over time, mainly just with people we begin to meet who had had strokes and whose kids had rare genetic disorders and who had been injured and were in a wheelchair, whatever, like these, we realized these were our people. Like, this began to create a new community, but one that we saw was in such dire need of resourcing and representation. And, you know, the largest minority group, according to the United Nations,
it's
people
insane.
With disabilities, because it's just such a broad swath of people. And frankly, most of us will have some experience with disability personally before we die, if we live long enough. And so, but the reality is, you know, there was just this group that we felt we could enter into, and that we had been sort of given almost this like anomalous story of disability. It doesn't normally work out like this. You don't normally have, you know, everything upended and kind of stay together and find a way to flourish on the other side of it. You know, you're bankrupt, you're struggling, there's suicide, there's depression, unemployment.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, just said, how can we offer this opportunity for families to find rest and find each other and find resources, spiritual resources and other kind of resources. And then we invited the whole family to that, including our family.
Right. So our kids are watching these stories, and it's such powerful perspective for their own story. And so they're finding, you know, it's complicated. They're finding all the things, but they're finding gratitude for what mommy can do and how daddy cares for mommy. And there's a lot of good stuff. And we talk a lot about that. We want to be a part of narrating to our children that life is hard and good at the same time, that we've really messed it up in the Western world, making it only good or only hard, and those can't coexist, because that's so silly. It would have done me a whole lot of good to recognize growing up life can be really hard and really good at the same time. But I only understood those as two separate buckets. They can't be joined. And so we're narrating to our children that God made them to do hard things and the good story he's writing in their lives. And we're just starting to see a glimmer that they're getting it, that their story is good, even though it has hard things in it.
So good. I mean, and here's the thing. This is the only normal they've ever known. And so this for them is life, right? And so there's something beautiful in the way that they will grow up with hearts for people who are differently abled, and just all of it, just all of it, all of it. I mean, there will be so much good that ends up coming from it. I love it. Let's talk about your relationship. Can we talk about your relationship? I'd like to talk about your relationship just for a second. So you guys met in college, I believe, which it has to be like 20 years ago. You were friends who became more than friends. You started making out, I assume. But here's the thing. We're having a conversation in front of people who are probably inside of a spectrum of different kinds of relationships, some that are thriving, some that are not, some who are married, some who are divorced, widowed, all the things. And so I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about how you've managed to keep the spark alive, stay connected and in love, in spite of, or maybe because of, every single thing that you've been through, even if there were times when you thought that this might be the end of what you knew as you transitioned into now what you know. How'd you ever overcome the adversity? I assume that there were fights or arguments or all of the things that inevitably every relationship works through. You just happen to have been handed some extra things to have to push past. Talk a little bit about how that has transformed your relationship over time.
So first of all, yes, all the fights, all the like drama, like lots of hardship. Even if I never would have had a stroke, we would have tension. That's just kind of the way it works in a marriage.
The best, probably. I think the best fights too are on the way to young marrieds that we were leading the young married Sunday school class in our church. You know, that was just always one of the most intense fights would happen, which is probably not an accident. But
yeah, seriously.
But I think nonetheless, you know, this idea of showing up one day at a time. I mean, I think that was the rhythm probably we got into early on when life changed. We were, you know, both 26. We had been married 3.5 years. And I think so often with relationships, you know, we look so far down the road and think nothing's going to ever change. And there's this sense of despair that creeps in, or we look backwards and think, you know, I just wish it was that way again. And
yeah.
I think that applies really to all our relationships and all of our relationship with ourselves too. But in marriage, we've just seen like, is there this opportunity to love what's right in front of us today? And will we wake up tomorrow and try to show up and see what's available the next day and just keep going? And again, that's oversimplifying because it's been a huge, huge, huge gift to get to walk through this together, but it's been incredibly hard too. I mean, we're both super strong-willed, you know, super type A, super like I'm an 8 on the Enneagram, Catherine's a 3. So we get things done, but it's not, you know, like there's this sort of simple equation. Like you go through trauma too, and you're birthed into somebody new, you know? And yeah. I think, you know, when you give these wedding vows, there's this sort of thought like how we are today in this moment, in this transaction is what it's going to be like in 30 years. And I think even like marriage studies show like every marriage just evolves into at least 2 or 3 variations of itself over time. And so I think that back to that sort of ability to pivot, I think is pretty huge. You know, we act like love is this sort of concrete thing rather than this evolving living thing. And are we willing to roll over? I love how this researcher said, I'm trying to remember his name, Stanley Hauerwas says, you know, we basically marry strangers. Like we think we know who we're getting in a relationship with, but are we willing to, once we roll over, say when the kids leave or when, you know, things change, like are we willing to say like, I don't know who that is exactly, but I'm willing to learn to love somebody new. And again, Catherine has had to learn to love somebody new as well. You know, it's like we both have been radically changed through our struggle and through our story of hope and overcoming. And are we going to still show up and try to learn this new, you know, learn to love this new person in front of us?
And Dave, I just again have to say, like, it's just very beautiful that you asked mm-hmm. us to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Just, I can imagine all the emotions and what you're mm-hmm. living and walking through, and to ask about our marriage, it's just really just speaks to who you are. I think that you want your listeners to hear that as well. Yeah. And that's just so vulnerable and bold of you. It's just very impressive. That's mm-hmm. very powerful. You're a wonderful man.
Wow. Thank you. You're so sweet, Catherine. Thank you. You guys have chosen each other in the midst of insanely, incredibly, ridiculously big, huge change every day over and over. And it's inspiring. And I applaud you. I think it's fantastic. I think it's awesome. Catherine, you have talked in interviews before about how important it is for young people, especially women, to understand that a beautiful person on the outside can still be suffering on the inside. Can you talk a little bit about how, though there will always be storms and struggles around the corner, you can continue to find strength and positivity in your life, regardless of the appearance that you may be putting on to the outside?
Oh, gosh, for sure. So like I was telling you about earlier, you know, I'm the one in the physical wheelchair every day, but everybody's got wheelchairs they're dealing with inside of them. I call them the invisible wheelchairs. That the lady next to you in the grocery store got a whole bunch of junk in her life, but you wouldn't necessarily know it. In some ways, I get a pass because I've got a wheelchair. Nobody's like, her life isn't really messed up. You know, like, in some ways, there's this bizarre freedom element to the wheelchair because nobody's pretending everything is okay in my life. Mm-hmm. It's weird. They're going to treat me with more care. I'm fragile. You know, I'm disabled. So other people walking around normal with no problems don't get that privilege. Mm. And you know, it's complicated because it's coming at a very high price. And yet there is this freedom element to that. And I think it translates so powerful as I've thought about issues, particularly with beauty and appearance and how that plays into this whole conversation. I kind of come to a place of recognizing that so much of the story of our actual appearance, particularly as women, but men too, is not a story we've told ourselves. It's stories we've believed from everybody else about who we are, what we look like, what that even means. And so much of truly understanding our appearance is about unlearning and unbelieving a lot of things that are not true. I think true beauty is about walking away from shame, in fact, that so much of our beauty is caught up in feeling shame about not looking this way or looking this way or so many things that actually have nothing to do with how I feel about the way I look. It's how other people told me to feel about the way I look, which is so messed up. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we should be listening to God's voice and not the plethora of people that don't matter telling me how to feel about myself.
So good. There's so much beauty in your strength and your story and your hope and your message. And I'm so stinking appreciative of it. What is next for the Wolf family? Do you know what's next? I mean, you've written two books, but you're running a camp. You have a whole host of amazing things. Are there designs for world domination? What is happening next?
Oh my gosh, what would you say?
It's on the list. I think I think it's been interesting even in the season of shifting gears during the pandemic to just similar to how we've talked about trauma as this opportunity. It's an explosion of a world, but it's an opportunity also to rebuild a new world together with the pieces. And I think in not too dramatic of a way, but also in a really exciting, maybe a little bit daunting way to think what kind of world do we want to rebuild on the other side of this? And so I think we're just excited to dream about what that could look like. And again, that's a privilege to be able to do that, frankly, this season. And so, we have been able to pivot a little bit, and we're excited to see sort of how, again, this limitation has opened up a new kind of flourishing. And I think it is a story I think we'll never stop telling. And it's the story of disability that we found, like what looks like a limit. Okay, a wheelchair. Wow, you're confined to a wheelchair. That's so tragic. Well, what if I actually saw this limitation as my avenue, the very medium that I can go be free in the world?
Yeah.
And I think when we start sort of upending sort of this idea of what is limited, what it means I don't get my dream, like what means like the story is not right, and say, what if that actually is the way in which I'm going to be able to be in the world? I can clearly more focus on what I have. I can be creative with it. I can find compassion for other people and their limitations. And so
And you live with such clarity and purpose.
Yeah.
And this is the path. So I know how to get there.
I think, with our hard story too, like, in theory, your heart would be more protective, self-protectionist, or maybe it'd be a little hardened and it would be sort of like not wanting to be vulnerable. But I think what's beautiful is when you've had your heart broken open. Again, it's part of our faith experience and our journey of walking with Jesus. Like, your heart doesn't have to become hard. It can be soft. It can be expanded. And so when you have that experience of compassion, which really means to suffer with, that's really what the root of compassion is about. It's about suffering. It's about loving something enough to suffer with it and for it. And to say, I already have enough stuff in my story, but I'm going to actually choose to get under the weight of yours too and lighten the load for everybody. And so I think that continues to motivate us that we have been given this experience of hope in the midst of a lot of wounding and pain and unknowns. And how do we get in the middle of other people's hard stories and help lift the burden off of them a bit? So whether that's disability or that's, just we're open. We're open to any stories that are hard, and we're hopeful to get to speak into what has given us a new way forward. And
next is going to be good for you guys, no matter what it ends up being. And I am here for it. I am here for it. Come on. I'm going to end this with the question I ask every humans that come on this show. And that is, I want to be able to give people a tangible piece of advice, a single thing, that they can walk away from this conversation with. So if someone is currently walking through a hard season, if something unexpected has come into their life, and who isn't experiencing unexpected things in the midst of this world we're living in right now, what is the single thing that you would recommend that they do today to help make that pain just feel a little lighter in their life?
You got an answer? Yeah. So it is so important when in seasons of terrible darkness to not waste what you're learning in the season of darkness. Mm. Don't just try so hard to get out of it that you don't learn the lessons in it. And that is so obvious, but all we want to do is fight or flight mode and get away from it, rather than saying, I love the passage Isaiah 45:3, that God has hidden treasure, riches stored in secret places, that there's really good stuff in the darkness that we get to cherish the rest of our lives and spend our lives with. We're never going to forget where we've been, honestly, try as we might, but our character is different because of it. Our perseverance is different. Our ability to live well because of the suffering we've been through is different. And all of that comes with us for our lives, if we have eyes to see it that way.
That's right. So good. I love it. All right. You guys are amazing. I'm so grateful for getting to see you again. I think it was in the Young Marrieds class 12 years ago where you were teaching. Rachel and I were sitting in the audience that I may have actually seen you last, which is unbelievable, on a hill in Bel Air, California. All right. If someone wants to follow you, be inspired by you, support the work you're doing with the camp, any of those, how can they get connected to you in the interweb?
Yeah. So our website is hopeheals.com, and then everything is Hope Heals. So all our socials, that's all.
All the things. All Hope Heals. Make it easy.
Our first book is called Hope Heals.
That's right.
And our second book is called Suffer Strong, both of which are really important concepts.
And we've got
excellent.
And again, the camp, you know, what's really cool about the camp we have for families with special needs is that there's people from all over the country and even the world that have come to rural Alabama in the summer. If you've never summered in Alabama, you haven't lived, obviously. I mean, you get it in Texas, it's hot. But it's so cool to just have, you know, people that who found us basically like on Instagram or online say, I just felt like I was supposed to be a part of this community. And it's been
both
transformational.
Both as volunteers and right. as campers,
yeah.
both.
Yeah, so we'd love... You know, it takes a huge village. You can't, you know, disability taught us nothing. It's like you can't do life alone. And
I love it. We will put the links to that, to your socials, to your books in the show notes so that every human being who's listening can check you guys out. I am so grateful for you both. I am so excited for the work that you will continue to do, the way that you will continue to inspire people with your story and give hope to people who are desperately in need of it. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, Jay. I appreciate you. I'm rooting for every single thing that you guys are going to do in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, if you enjoyed this conversation, and how the heck couldn't you, I hope that you will take a picture of it, that you will put it into your social, that you will tag myself and Hope Heals on Instagram and tell us what you got from it. Share it with some friends. And until the next time, we will see you next week on another episode of the Rise Together podcast.
Rise Together is hosted by me, Dave Hollis. This show is produced by Chelsea Harfouche and edited by Andrew Weller, with production support by Sterling Coates. Cameron Berkman is our executive producer. Rise Together is a product of The Hollis Company.